Thank you, Robin. I want to nominate the Honorable Nyakembe to be the acting chairperson. That's my proposal. Thank you, Honorable Maluleka. And Ms. Sekona? Honorable Kundi moves to second the nomination. May I ask Honorable Nyakembe to take the chair of the chairperson? Thank you.
Good morning and welcome, Minister of Innovation, from the government and the bargaining council, honorable members. Are there any apologies? The Deputy Minister wants part of us. Honorable Williams also want to attend the meeting. And I think we have already heard that the chairperson of the Control Commission is out of the country. The agenda for today's portfolio committee is two items. I think members have received the agenda in advance, but there will be a slightly change. Instead of starting with item number one, we'll start with item number two. Item one becomes item two. That's the only change, which I think honorable members are not violently opposed to that. Because in any way, the items that we have to look at, not violently, thank you very much. May we request the minister leading us on the briefing on service charter for the public service. And of course, if minister, there are people who will speak after you, they are free to do so. Thank you.
Honorable Nyakembe, thank you very much, members of the portfolio committee, members of the media. I'd like to indicate to the portfolio committee that we have invited to be with us here General Secretary of the Bargaining Council, Mr. Fritti de Bruyn, and he is no relationship. He has no relationship with Sophie de Bruyn, so this is an effort to them that too. And also the Vice Chair representing the employer in the bargaining chamber, Mr. Farisani Hopi, who is with him. These are the people who represent the sector that we signed the service charter with. And we're very happy to have them here today. Chairperson, I wish to apologize up front for the fact that we may have sent out our invitation for the launch of the service charter perhaps too late for members of Parliament to join us. But we're very happy to be joined by yourself, Chairperson, at the launch. It was a historic occasion. It really was an occasion that I believe will go down in our annals as the first and a very significant step that has been taken by ourselves in ensuring that we can do what it is that we're employed to do and that we're entrusted to do. I'd like to ask members of my team to very briefly just indicate who they are so that members of the portfolio committee are conversant with the team that I have I'll ask the acting DG and every other DDG here, please, to stand up and indicate who they are.
Thank you, Amanda. Good morning, honourable members, colleagues. My name is Karen Kogobana, the acting DG. Thank you. Good morning, Minister, honourable members. My name is Alex Mahapa, the Deputy Director General for Service Delivery within the Department of Public Service and Administration.
My name, I'm Kumbure Ndamon, the Deputy Director General, Labour.
Good morning, I'm Kuchikina, I'm the DDG for Legal Services.
Morning, Johanna Mansata, Minister of Manpower and Better.
Manu, my name is Mabai Mugu, I work for the Minister.
Good morning, my name is Naomi Elvin-Kiwen, I'm the branch coordinator for the Labour branch.
Morning, Minister, morning, honorable members. My name is Sandin Baisha from the Minister of Law.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Swati Kaita, I'm the manager of Labour and Public
from TBSA Director Negotiation.
Good morning, my name is Mahoma Kseluki Somshara, the National Affairs Program at Department of Public Health and Administration. Thank you.
My name is Nikuna Saburo. I'm from the Center of Public Health Administration, Korea, and the National African Affairs.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, when I just want to give you a brief background to the charter, and I will allow members of the bargaining chamber to also give their perspective on this. And then, with your permission, we would like the DDG responsible for labour, General Ndaba, to take us through the content of the charter itself, and then we'll be able to take questions or take any further input from members who are present. When we started our negotiations around the wage negotiations of 2012, one of the things that concerned us most, and I think I indicated to the portfolio committee at that particular time, was the wage bill. And so one of my first encounters with Labour was to indicate to them that we would need to be extremely careful what we do, because we are living in an economic climate that is not conducive to further growth in the public sector or any growth in the wage bill in the public sector. I indicated further that I would want us at the end to come out with a negotiated settlement that was a win-win for all. That in all my time as a minister in government, wage negotiations were always about what the employee wants and what the employer should give. And that I had wanted us to consider a shift in this perspective, so that we actually indicate as the employer what it is that we expect of labour, in the same way as labour is very able and articulately agile in putting its demands on the table. I indicated also to them, and also in various public fora that I had at that time, that I would have wanted to find a way in which we as citizens of the country can measure the productivity of what it is that we're paying for, so that when labour is demanding salary increases that they do demand, we should be able to say against what it is that we are granting that. The question did come, I'm not sure they came from the portfolio committee, but certainly in my engagement with the public, how do you measure the productivity of the public service? And at that time, I had not quite made up my mind how we measure the productivity of the public service. But in continuous engagement with the public, with the bargaining chamber and representatives of unions, of labour in the came, it became quite clear that it would be possible for us to measure productivity. And after we had gone beyond the first camp of very heated discussions and walkouts and walk-ins, we did come to an agreement that we all of us have a responsibility to our people. Wherever we are, whether we're the employer or the employee, we have a basic responsibility to those people who pay taxes every day and are therefore expecting a particular service from ourselves. This we were in complete agreement with. Labour itself said, look, Minister, if you had an impression that we are here just to demand money, it's very wrong. We also have responsibilities. We care that our people who are employed in the public sector are looked after properly by the state. We care that their conditions are conducive. We care about a whole lot of other things that would make it possible for us to raise our productivity. So right from the after a bumpy start, it looked like we were on to a very good start. We were able to say that part and parcel of the wage negotiation will be a number of things. One of them preeminently was the three-year term that we had agreed to, that we are agreeing to a three-year term in which this is the standard that we will set and we will abide by it. Labour had a whole host of things that they would have wanted us to agree on, and we did agree on them. And we agreed on them precisely because we wanted to create an environment where we as South Africans can live in an environment which is free of any fear that tomorrow there might not be schooling, that tomorrow there might be a disruption because of unhappiness by labour. But we did set ourselves serious time frames around which we should do certain things. This one is one of the most fundamental shifts that we had laid down, that we would like to have a service charter where both of us agreed on the basic necessity to improve service delivery. There isn't anybody who is not listening to the radio or reading the newspaper who doesn't understand the extent of the concern of our citizens about service delivery. This Labour understood, this is very well understood by everybody. So we then had agreed that this would be the start of a very long journey around which it would be possible for us to consolidate those methods that we agree on, and it will make it so much better for us to do what we are required to do. We therefore agreed on the signing of the charter as part of this wage negotiation, and when I came to report to the portfolio committee about the success that we had had in our wage negotiations. An amazing thing happened because we had an honourable Detroit who was had fallen off a horse and was on crutches and cemented leg. He actually gave a standing ovation on his cement leg. Do I interpret you correctly? The very first time I came into this, you had a disability and you said it wasn't your wife that kicked you, you fell off the horse. Do you not remember? But when I did get the congratulatory message from Parliament, I indicated that that was just the first. We would have many more of such successes, and I'm really glad that you had the confidence in me to support me and urge me along this particular path. We're here now. We launched the charter on, Mr. Ndaba will indicate the exact date. That was the launch. We were invited to the bargaining council where all but one of the members of Labour had signed, and we had a very good engagement in the bargaining chamber. I was invited there, and we had a discussion around how to proceed on that. By the time we had our discussion, the one outstanding member had been so embarrassed that he actually literally ran to the table to append his signature. By the time we left the bargaining council, all of the members of Labour had signed on the charter. So it's historic, not only because it's a new part, but because every member of the bargaining council signed and affirmed that this is what they commit themselves to. I will not say who the last member was, but nonetheless, we all signed. I was welcomed. I met a general secretary there, very welcoming. I met Mr. Poppy there, and we worked through some of the elements of the charter. Labour had a number of questions that they put to me, and we had really lengthy discussions. We discussed also the PEM bill, which will be tabled before Parliament before long. They expressed their concerns about a number of outstanding matters that they felt perhaps we needed to attend to that were part and parcel of the wage negotiation. But at the end of that meeting, we were all in one spirit that we are here to serve the people of this country, living up to our motto, which is about baby the people first. We then agreed we were going to have a public launch where all of us would publicly confirm our allegiance to the Charter and indicate to the South African public what all of us intend to do in the service of the state and in their service as well. We did then launch on the 29th, it was a public matter, which was televised by SABC2. At that particular point, we also indicated and managed to launch, thanks to my media team, a Vatubili call center, which would have been an answer to. But if you are pledging these things, to do these things, what do we as Mr. Joseph citizens do if you don't live up to that? So we indicated that we're now opening up the lines of the Vatubili call center. We gave them the number. Please feel free to call and lodge your complaint. We will use this complaint to measure with how people respond to the services. This is one of the measures in which we could use to measure the productivity of the civil service. We also agreed with the leadership of Labour that they would give their personal cell phone numbers, and I am certain that Mr. De Bruyne would be able to give those personal cell phone numbers to members of the portfolio committee of each head of the Labour movement or the Labour Union, so that should you come across any serious concern that you have, you can phone Labour directly and say, this is the issue I have with your people. Please phone such as soon as we are done. Say we're writing exams in a few months' time. We hope that the teachers are in class teaching, and they all pledge to that. It is in the charter. So we have a call centre that is open, and the details of that will be also indicated today, so that people have a result when they are unhappy with our service or when they have any issues to raise about our productivity and our services. And to the members of the portfolio committee, we have pledged ourselves to the charter. We will perform to the best of our ability on every clause in the charter. Some of the clauses there are of progressive realization of that charter, but some are more immediate, and I'm hoping that the general will indicate which ones are those will be for immediate action. We will then ask members of the portfolio committee if it is possible to champion the charter for us through Parliament, so that we are able to popularize this document, to say that we, who represent the state, who give services to our people on behalf of the state, pledge ourselves to these principles and these values in the charter. And so that all political parties in Parliament can actually take ownership of this and hold us accountable to this through the charter. We've already had support from various parties which have called us asking for copies of the charter, and we have responded to them. We would like to be able to now make this a joint venture with the portfolio committee, driving the service charter to say to our people, we understand your concerns about service delivery, we're doing something about it, and this is what we are doing. Chairperson, thank you very much. I will now ask members of the bargaining chamber to make their comments, opening comments, and then we will ask, with your permission,
General Ndaba to take us through the elements of the charter, and we will ask Mr. Ndivuo Mabaya to indicate how the call center works. It didn't work quite as well on the day we launched it. Fortunately, I wasn't wearing red because you would not have distinguished the color of my face from my dress. But it was a really tense, embarrassing 7 minutes of waiting for technology to kick in. But finally, it did work. And we're able to connect with the call center. Sita was able to explain what the problem was, and it was able to explain how the call centers work and what it is that they're responsible for. At some point, when the portfolio committee does have the opportunity, we would like them to visit the call center and see what it is that Sita does to ensure that we're connected to the public. Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee. Let me first of all thank the Minister for the invite to be part of the delegation to address the Portfolio Committee today on the service charter. I think Minister has touched on quite a few important areas, and we can overemphasize it as much as we want, but it remains critical. I think the first issue is that the service charter comes from a multi-term agreement. If we look at the current unrest in our country in terms of negotiations and what is coined by the media as a strike and all of those areas, the multi-term agreement really brings stability within the public service, and this charter flows out of that stability. And that is what I think also makes it a very important product. Also, Minister has mentioned that it's a win-win agreement. And we've gone back into our agreement, and it's really for the first time ever that government has won something out of a wage negotiation process and out of a wage engagement with labour on the other side. So I think those are important cement blocks in ensuring the success of the aspect of the charter when it comes. I think the first time when we were busy with negotiations and when the minister came in, and it was in the time that it was a very critical time with in the chamber. I think the day the minister started, the day that the union walked out, and they said, no, we are not engaging anymore. And when the minister's team returned and said, we want to include a service charter, or a public service charter into this agreement, I thought, oh my gosh, this is really going to be a challenging process and a challenging event. But I think commitment from the minister and commitment from his team as well actually delivers the process in terms of what we have today. The service charter in itself, I believe, it can also not be overemphasized as to the importance of it. Since the launch, we've had quite a few engagements with our constituencies in terms of feedback on the service charter in itself. We've actually started to keep statistics of calls that we get in terms of inquiring about the charter and inquiring about the enforcement and processes around the charter. But I think the most important area that we've picked up is the feeling of belonging coming back to the public service. People in the public service, the people that you engage with actually through the charter feel that this is really giving me back my dignity as a public servant. You get people that call that says, I can commit to these things, I can commit to what is certain there, I can deliver a service like this. Just wanting to express that. So I think only that part, if only that part is what comes out of the charter at all, I think that is already contributing positively into it itself. It has enhanced the environment in terms of engagement within the chamber itself. There was a lot of animosity, there was a lot of mistrust in the processes in itself, but I think through the engagement and through bringing through the principles out of the charter in itself, it also restored some of that relationship in terms of engagement as well. At the chamber, we are very positive, and we believe that the charter is going to be the basis for growing the relationship and growing the engagement, and for really professionalizing the public service and ensuring that there's a service delivery which the charter wants to bring on. Thank you very much. I think I will leave the comments at the end. Chairperson, you would like to add? No, it's fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Is the Deputy Chairman want to say something? Okay, thank you. General,
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Minister, thank you very much. I will quickly take you through the contents of the charter. And this is basically the outline. We'll give you the introduction, the context, how we define the charter, what's the purpose of the charter, other objects of the charter, some of the articles in the charter. We'll also give you the implementation process as well as the schedule of interviews that we have. Resolution 1 of 2012 on the improvement in terms and conditions of service. Public servant committed practice by a charter. Resolution 1 is the clear agreement that the minister referred to. All parties have appeared to be signed the service charter on the 28th of June 2013. It is now known as Resolution 1 of 2013. That resolution enjoys 100% majority signature. What reforms the charter, or what were some of the concerns that informed us in developing the charter? We were concerned about the levels of service delivery and efficiency in government, the need for a reciprocal relationship between the wage bill and the performance of public service, in essence, the value for money. The relationship between the state, public servant, and the citizen, and the ability of the state to render professional assessment and quality afforded to the sustainable service. The context to this derives from the Constitution, Chapter 10, and it is very clear what it is that we expect. We expect a high standard of professional ethics. In the public service, we must have an efficient and economic and effective use of resources of the state. We must be impartial in our conduct, we must be fair, we must be unbiased in the provisioning of services. Transparency is key. People's needs must be responded to, and that must be done promptly. Public administration must be accountable, and also must ensure that good human resource management and career development practices are used to maximize the potential. Other legislative context here is the Public Service Act, Act 1994, as amended, as well as the Public Service Regulations, the White Paper on Transformation and the Public Service. Talks about the PDA and about the PDA principles, and as well as various pieces of government legislation which were developed since 1994 and other international agreements. How do we define this charter? This is an accord between the state as an employer and the public service union represented in the PSBBC. It is a social contract, it is a pledge, a commitment between the state and public servants. It sets out roles and responsibilities of parties, and it also enables service beneficiaries to understand what they can expect from the state, and will form the basis of engagement between government and citizens. What the charter does is recommit parties to the principles of consultation that we should always get value for money. As the state, citizens, and all the parties who are involved, that we should be transparent, accountable, that the principle of redress is key, we should be courteous in our conduct, and we should share information as much as possible to those who need information to the constituents of services that we provide. The charter is a pledge by all public servants to improve service delivery. What is key about this is that public servants are saying that they realize that they have a pivotal role to play in the improvement of service delivery. It's also a recognition by the state that it's a responsibility of the state to provide the necessary resources for public servants to optimally perform their duties.
there is no point in public service coming to work and they don't have the requisite form as they are choose. So the state is making a firm commitment that it will provide such resources for public service to perform their choices. State unions will ensure that their members are abide by the pledge, and these have been in instances of breach. In this instance, although we appreciate that they have a responsibility to defend their members, but we also want them to take an active part in ensuring that service delivery is improved. The Charter is a commitment by all to serve the country with pride. It is a vehicle to fast-track service delivery in response to needs and aspirations of services. And we know that although that a lot has been achieved, but there have been elements of sluggishness, and this is what we seek to address. We also recognize that the engagement of citizens in the delivery of public services, that without the active participation of public services, the delivery of services will be compromised. It is a forecast, strategic and long-term and coordinated approach to address the lack of skills, lack of service leaders, understaffing, and to build a professional public service. In this charter, we also define services that are offered by the state to the citizens. We define what service standards we outline what the service standards should be. And we also register the commitment by the state and the employer towards public service and specify commitments by public service towards the people. Some of the objects of the charter, the first one is to improve service delivery programs and enhance productivity, but we also want to define certain standards and other steps. There are quite enough, four main steps, and all of these health sector education must have specific standards according to which their performance must be measured. The charter will also facilitate social dialogue and will strengthen the social partnership between different parties. It will encourage citizen participation in delivery of public services. It also ensures efficiency in service delivery, and it will also reward excellent performance. Some of the articles of the charter, one of them talks to the purpose of the charter, what it is that they seek to achieve, who the partners to the charter are, and I've already said that it's the state as the employer, and as the citizen, and as the public servant. Where do we find these partners? It also lists the services that the state offers. Education, sanitation, and electricity, quite a variety of services that the state offers. Service standards is quite critical. How do we determine whether we're performing at optimal level? There must be a measure. And if we have a service standard, we'll be able to measure whether we're performing optimally. It's a commitment by the state as the employer and a commitment by public service. What the state commits to is to provide the resources for public servants to perform their services. On the other hand, what public servants are committing to is the resources given to them to perform at an optimal level and improve the efficiency in the delivery of their services. Of course, the next issue talks to the implementation of the charter. The minister referred to the launch on the 29th of August. During this launch, we were joined by the trade unions that signed the charter. But over and above that, we also received a statement of support from consultants, with support from producers, from the independent union, business as well as NEFA. On the 4th of September, the cabinet endorsed the charter. And in endorsing the charter, it gave much importance on what it is that we should do in popularizing the church. And one of the things that as we popularize the church, we should also ensure that besides interpreting it in 11 languages, praying is also used in means of communication. But of course, there are a number of other campaigns.
The Service Charter has been completed in 11 languages of Australia. We expect particular coordinators to do the copies of the charter to all the partners. Already we've started with public awareness programs, and these will take various forms. One of them is the particular call center, which General Mabaya will speak to. Public is encouraged to write to ministers and council officers, including municipal managers. Premiers will lead the provincial launches, and this will happen in the month of October 2018 to March 2014. And the aim really of all this is to educate all public servants on the charter, to educate the public on the content of the charter in order for them to monitor implementation and provide feedback. The charter will also be tabled in the legislature, provincial legislature, as well as municipal council, and this is to ensure implementation and monitoring of the charter. The charter will also be incorporated in the performance agreements of departments as well as the management. Public servants will also be expected to sign the charter and in a sense become a contract of employment. The Office of Standards and Compliance will also monitor implementation on a quarterly basis. Of course, as part of this implementation, we've scheduled a series of interviews with the various provincial legislations, including SAPC. We also have been meetings that are in the pipeline to popularize the charter. So that, in brief, is an outline of the charter. Thank you.
Thank you, General. But I think you indicated that somebody will speak on the particular call center.
She is the chief director responsible for communication with the Nintendo Group Mobile.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. We have set up a particular call center, which is quite used to be in the same building with the presidential hotline, managed and operated by the State Information Technology Agency Center. The number is on the back of the charter, which is 486-0428392. So the back of the charter, the number is there. The reason we have put it at the back of the charter is that we want this call center to be a tool of empowerment to members of the public, that when they go to any service point of government, if they are not happy with the service that is being offered, they have that call center, they can call, they will be able to be assisted in all the 11 languages. What we have done to support the call center is that there is a backup that allows us to follow up on some of these inquiries. So if you call the call center is able to give you a solution to the challenge that you have. The call center will then refer to a back room, which will then follow up direct with the department, either national department, provincial department, or a municipal office, or any other government institution. The approach we have taken with the call center is that all public servants, which means anyone who is paid through public money, can be reported to the minister. The minister can refer the matter to another department to be resolved, but we would like to follow up on that and make sure that it has been perceived. Since we launched the charter on the 29th, we have received a number of calls, and the most interesting one is somebody who was refusing their service. And that's one thing that we've been encouraging, and the minister has said that a number of times, that when members of the public go to a service point, when they arrive at a place and they feel that this service is not correct, they must refuse. They must say, this is not what public servants are supposed to do. And we hope this call center, the email facilities that we have, the Twitter, the Facebook, will be able to give a platform for feedback from members of the public to the department and to the minister. The call center is on, and it is running as we speak. It is open. It is not a toll-free number. It's a shared call number. And the reason we put it as a shared call number is to make sure that those who call there, they stay for a shorter time, and we are able to call back to them. But to be in call center before, it was a toll-free number. As a result, they were answering thousands and thousands of cases, some of them duplication, some people talking for 30 minutes. But with this call center, since it was reduced to a shared call means that if you call for one round, we pay for 50 cents and you pay for 40 cents. And we found that people are giving us correct information, they are staying very short time in the call center, and if we need additional information, we are able to call them back and get that additional information. Thank you.
In addition, Chairperson, I wanted to say that we did take the opportunity when we were launching the charter to remind our citizens that we do have a code of conduct for public servants. And I just wanted to refresh the minds of members of parliament, and we will actually make copies for members of parliament so that we are able fully together to hold public servants accountable. And just some of the issues that part and parcel of the code of conduct, apart from the fact that at all times they will, those who deal directly with the public will wear a badge, compulsory to wear a badge that indicates their designation, that indicates what their name is, so that anybody who served in a public space by the public servant knows who they are dealing with. Secondly, we are wanting to ensure that public servants cooperate fully with other employees within the workplace, so that at all times the public comes first, their personal interest comes second, and that they execute their responsibilities within reasonable time, and they are official and professional in what they do. They refrain from favoring relatives or friends in work-related activities, and do not abuse their authority or influence over other employees, nor are they allowed to influence or abuse their own authority. They use the appropriate channels should they have a grievance to direct these grievances, that they are committed to optimal development and are motivated and are using their space to motivate their staff that may fall or report to them, fall under them or report to them, that they deal fairly with everybody and equitably with people of either race, color, gender, ethnic, age, orientation, any form of disability, religion, political persuasion, conscience, belief, culture, and language. Which means that we've got to strive to make sure that we are in our services as multilingual as possible, or provide language facilities to make it possible for all to be able to communicate with us. And that they refrain from party political activities in the workplace undermined. We encourage all employees to strive to achieve their objectives in the institutions that they work with in the interest of the public, that they are creative in their jobs, and that those who are at senior management level are available to serve the state on a 24-hour basis. Am I paraphrasing it a bit too much? At all times. Are available to serve the state. The state, on the other hand, will try to ensure that we understand that these individuals who serve the state have lives and have other responsibilities, that they are punctual in the execution of their duties, that they are properly dressed for the occasion and competent and deal competently with people, do not engage in any transaction which is in conflict or infringes on the execution of their duties, and should at all times be very sober, and etc., etc. We will make this available to members of Parliament so that they do know that this is against the backdrop of a code of conduct of public servants. That they, at all times they will be honest and impartial, and all of those good things that we want from public services. Be on time, and teach 8 hours, be responsible, teach responsibly, etc. We also ask them to disclose any information of personal gain in the course of their responsibilities, and that they are not allowed to do any remunerative work outside of their official duties without permission. Thank you, Chairperson. That is the presentation we wanted to give to you. We are open now, Chairperson, for any comments or questions.
Thank you very much, Minister and the Department. I think it's one of the good things after the process of that not only salary increases and working hours that are budget, that also how to even deliver service to the public becomes the outcome of the collective bargaining process. I think we appreciate what the department together with the level of the bargaining council in concluding the agreement. It is also packaged with the services. Because I think it's a commitment, not only from government, but also from employees in the public sector. I thought I must make that comment. I think those who have raised hands are not suggesting that I'm out of order. They are raising hands in order for me to note them. Because I couldn't welcome the presentation before I listened. So I've listened to the presentation, then now I am welcoming the presentation and invite her that would like to comment and ask questions. Honorable Mare, followed by Honorable Toys, Honorable Malenke, and Honorable Muhale. And the last, not one, the last one, Honorable Ramatagale.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation, Minister. Just a few questions, and I think some of that is following from what you said. So maybe to a certain extent it's in support of what you said, but things that didn't come out very clearly to me. The first one is obviously the one thing that we were all very enthusiastic about when you started off was the 3-year salary agreement. Just want to know whether there was at any stage, any indication of a deviation from that, from the employee side, and how that was dealt with. And if I'm correct, the 2-year term is probably running out next year, or so we can just elaborate on that. The second one, the one that you have mentioned right from the beginning, you have said people have asked you, how will this be measured? And I've listened in the presentation and I couldn't pick up how it will be objectively measured. There's mention about acknowledgement of performance. There's a lot of things in the charter that is a commitment from both sides, which is good. But how will we measure productivity? How will we measure whether cannot be subjectively. How will we measure effectiveness? Even the Basupeli call center, there's timelines, things like that, implementation. So if we must hold the user service charter as the mechanism to hold them accountable, on what basis? How will it be measured? How will that feedback be? I mean, you mentioned something about don't employ friends and family. Fantastic. How will we measure it? And so in other words, we can only do something if it can be objectively measured. Otherwise, it's my opinion versus the other person's opinion. And it cannot be on a subjective way. The other question is, in the document, there's an implication, or it implies municipalities as well. Now, I don't see anywhere in the charter that SALGA was consulted. And obviously we know at this stage, at least, it is not the mandate of the DPSA to work on local government level. While I see this in the presentation, if you can elaborate on that more, most certainly, ask the question whether it's relevant at this stage in terms of municipalities. And then you've mentioned that the premiers will roll this out. Now, it is wonderful the employers and employees or the trade union, their representatives, have signed this. Was there any presentation being done to premiers and provinces? Will they sign it? With that commitment, and if so, when will they do that? And if they have done it, have all of them done it? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Minister. I'm just going to get into this as quickly as possible because there's a lot of questions on this. The name tag, I just want to tag something else to the name tag. I appreciate the fact that we have a name tag for all employees. I was thinking, should we take it a little bit further? Everyone have a business card, an official business card, with their contact details, maybe an immediate supervisor or something like that, or some reporting line, being available if it's needed. In private business, I often have to resort to, can I speak to your immediate supervisor or your manager, because you don't get the service in the private sector. So it's very professional because people don't have pen to write down names, or they maybe misspell it, or they can't remember, and I think that will empower the public a little bit further. If he says, can I have your business card, and I don't know who I talked to, who helped me, who did not help me, some people actually helped me. Okay, so that's one thing. The other thing is, Kubus has covered me quite well on most of the stuff, but I want to get back to the objectivity which you talked about on measuring. I was looking at the Article 5 and the service standards, for instance, the on page 5 and 6, the Article 7 is quite exhaustive up to 35 or more. Service standards are about 11 or so. I'm impressed with the work that's been done. I trust that it went through it. I just want to have some assurance when this was drawn up, were there any objective list or some research done amongst the inputs from the public? I mean, if you look at the service standards, and the commitment by public servants. Did the public somehow, how would we know we didn't leave out one or two things, important things? You must have gone through that with your people and trust them on it. It would have been interesting for me to know if there was an objective set of data where they gleaned this from. Okay. Talked about the municipal situation. I was just wondering, for instance, number 14, on slide 14, it's referred to writing to the municipal managers. I was just thinking if we're going to walk into a quagmire there, and do you foresee any problems with that? Municipal managers being in the position that they are, and also when you talk to councils, you know, you're going to have to deal with different parties in control of the council. It could become quite sometimes, you know, small politics, so to speak. I'm just looking at that problem. And then the last thing I have is on page 6 of the charter, 7.8, it reads not unfairly discriminate against any members of the public. Now, I know what's in the constitution, but just such a funny word for me, you know, not unfairly discriminate. Does it imply that we can discriminate fairly? I wish we could just, you know, South Africa could get around that word, not unfairly discriminate, because there is no such thing as fair discrimination in my mind. Well, I was just thinking around this one. Maybe you have a view on it. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. Let me also join Chuck to welcome the presentation. And thank you, Minister, for this presentation shows that you take our concerns seriously. Because if you can, we have talked about it on the budget vote. That we just see the board of budget failure, but we don't see the physical implementation. So this report is part of the to resolve the issue that we have raised. And we thank you for the hard work on this matter. I want to maybe get clarity on the issue of the call center. Because most of the time the toll-free are not waiting on cell phones, are not free. And one just wants to ask that is this one shared on the cell phone? Also, maybe want to check for people in rural areas. Because most of the time, if I talk about this, is it shared on the cell phone? We don't have a landline in the rural areas. Maybe a person from Rastas Road, if there's no less lines there, if the cell phone is not shared, how is he or she going to reach the toll, the battery call center? And also want to check, what about these suggestion boxes? How are they linked in this charter? Also want to check on yes, I wanted to check also on the issue of the suggestion boxes, how are they fitting on this, and also appreciate for documents that will be in our oral level languages, and maybe a request that if you can maybe put our also in our constituency offices so that we can share with our constituencies. And want to check also, do you have staff that will assist us maybe in our constituencies when we call the meeting so that they may come and present to our communities? Thank you.
I know that the two remaining hands, there was a request that looking at the volume of questions and comments that have been raised by the first speaker, tell the department, talk to them, and then not to say that I'm ruling you out after the department, then we'll follow Honorable Muhale and then
Thank you, Chairperson. You have put into practice
the term not unfair discrimination. You're discriminating against Ramachakane, Honorable Ramachakane, on fair grounds, that we have made a request to respond before the I was at a loss how to actually practicalize that term. Chairperson, if you'd allow me to start from the back to the first. Thank you very much, Honorable Mother Benga, for the comments that you've made. Yes, we would like you to take ownership of this product so that it becomes part and parcel of what government as a whole commits itself to. And we would be making ourselves available to popularize the charter, because this is one way in which we're saying to our people, you do count. We are here as government to serve you. Whether we're in the provinces, whether we're local government, whatever political party, our job is to serve you. That is what governments are empowered to do. So we would be very grateful if you would take up this responsibility, if you would want to take it to your constituency. Yes, we would be able to give you copies for your constituency. Right now, we have not been able to translate it into 11 languages because of the cost factor and the time factor and the availability of the expertise that we would require. But in the long run, we are hoping that this will happen. We are also hoping that we will be able to put these up in every service center, so that anybody who comes in immediately understands what their rights are and what the responsibilities of the people who are employed by the state are in that particular area. In relation to the call and the sharing of the call, I will ask at the end the Chief Director to explain this. I don't think we discriminate against whether it is a landline call or a cell phone call. But even as you were speaking, I was wondering if we could not persuade the department. We have financial constraints, and this is why we've also got to use our resources as effectively and efficiently as possible. And to make sure that we can get maximum benefit, we want the person who is calling us to take part of the responsibility of the resources. But I was wondering if we could not persuade the department to consider that perhaps the first 2 minutes should be free. And then perhaps they go on for longer, they go on at their own expense. Because you actually might find somebody who is desperate to call, might not have the resources to call, and actually has a legitimate problem. But thank you for that question. The engagement also helps sharpen our own delivery system. So we will consider that, MP, but I think that the shared responsibility is between whether it's a landline or cell phone line. What are the suggestion boxes? Normally the suggestion boxes, we have the DDG here for service delivery. Normally the suggestion boxes are for the department itself. How can we do things better? The department would be saying. We are generally dealing with standards of the entire public service because that is our responsibility. What was asked of me by Labour when we were at the launch was to say, now that you are committing to do these things on behalf of government, are you certain that your colleagues will commit to do the same thing? And I said, of course they will, because we share the same values and principles, and I'm here representing them. But what we did do to carry that through is to actually put it to cabinet, so that every cabinet member is now bound by the responsibilities that the state is bound by in the charter. So the suggestion boxes there would be the department's own responsibilities about understanding whether their service standards meet the level that we require. We might be considering ourselves to have not a suggestion box, but maybe a complaint box, because that one would be also an indication to us about whether our service level is meeting the standards. Let me then, without discriminating, unfairly go to Honorable Detroit. Honorable Detroit, how did we come to put this charter together? Most of the elements in the charter that we wanted to put across are the responsibilities of the public servant itself. The other responsibilities are those responsibilities that might be contained in legislation that are already contained in various other regulations that are contained in the Code of Conduct. And we felt it would not benefit us to go into them except to mention the critical ones. But the ones that go up to 13 are those that are standards that are binding on all of us, especially the responsibility of the person who is providing service to our people. Because we want to say to our people, you count, and this is what we're committing we're going to do. So there wasn't any kind of thumbs up. But we also did veer towards working out how charters are written generally so that we comply with a particular universal standard of how charters are written, and that is how we worked on this particular one. And the question is, should we not consider the possibility of having a business card? That would be a workable solution. The financial implications for the state would be enormous. But we are taking this as a suggestion, perhaps to think about it and see how we can operationalize that. And also, we would like to protect the people who are employed by the state from any harassment. If you get into a home affairs office and you feel unfairly treated, you know the name, but you may not venture into that person's private life beyond their employment at work. But if they give you your number, they're not protected from you calling them at midnight and telling them exactly what you think of them when they have other responsibilities. So we also have a responsibility to protect that space of the person that is employed by the state that does not belong to us. But we will consider perhaps making sure that the management, either in the center itself, you would need to say, should you have a problem, here is the name of the manager and here is the office line of the manager. If you have any complaints, cannot get through to the call center, please feel free to call the manager. Then there was a question, I will come back to that, I think it was, how do we get to dealing with issues of the council, if the problem is at council level? Could I come back to that later? Honourable Murray, you know, this was time language changes. The first time I came into this meeting and I gave a briefing on the wage negotiation, the word was not enthusiastic. It was very happy, ecstatic. Should I remind you the words that we use now? It's just basic, enthusiastic. I mean, it is called the erosion of truth, of effect, of emotion, yes, with time. But thank you, thank you for that enthusiastic, no matter how diminished it is from the first instance. How would we objectively measure the effectiveness of the delivery of state apparatus? I think this is a universal question. Anywhere in the world, we as government, any government, is continuously trying to work out how they measure the effectiveness of their public service. And while we're in pursuit of the final objective measurement of the effectiveness of the public service, in the meantime, what we've done is agreed on a social compact between ourselves and Labour, which lays the basis of how we behave. In time, we will possibly find an objective measurement of whether or not we are delivering effectively. But this one indicates the public our commitment to delivering this particular service. When we worked on the Constitution, we worked on the principles of the ideal. What is it that we would want to commit ourselves to? And we all committed ourselves to that. The measurement of whether or not that does work is when you take the matter to the Constitutional Court, or whether you take that, you know, to test that particular instrument. We would like to be able to test this instrument. Is it working? Is it giving us effectiveness? If not, we would probably have to enhance the measurement of how effective it is. At the moment, it is a base document that indicates our shared values, our shared commitment to serving our people. And anything else that happens after that, we will empower that. We'll empower our delivery. And where the presentations made to the premiers, no, we normally would meet with the premiers in what is called the Presidential Council, PCC, Presidential Premier Council, Presidential Coordinating Council. And the one that was scheduled for this month has been postponed to next month. And this is where this matter will be serving. And we will be requesting the premiers to sign on it. When we negotiate a salary engagement, we do it on their behalf. I represent them when we sign up on 7%. I therefore have represented them when I signed up on this charter. I'd like them to take responsibility, and I am certain that all of them will take responsibility for all of it, in the same way as they took responsibility for the 3 years that we've got. It is me not projecting into 7 years. It is I made it possible on their behalf that we have the 3 years. I'd like them to take in good faith that this was done on your behalf as well. I hope they will sign it.
Just the question of the implied implications on local governments and that Salco was not a party to this,
the current mandate of the public service does not cover local government. But as you know, the PEM bill is in the process of being put into place. Should we succeed in the PEM bill, then we would be able to negotiate with local government to be a signatory of this. That would be part of what we call the progressive realization of this and loading it out to ONCA. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Any additions? Areas that you might like to elaborate further, what the minister said to the president?
I have nothing to do with the comment on this.
I'm worried with your answer, General. That means the minister can do everything. So next time, I think. If she will not attend the cabinet meeting, you have a car.
Honorable Bohane, followed by Honorable Ramakaran.
Thank you, Acting Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation that we had today, and also appreciate the services charter to say. You see, you always reinvent. We had Batu Pedro Omu, and now we are having a service charter with us. It means you always reinvent, come up with new ideas, build on the other ones, and improve. We would like to thank also, because this is a result of the PSCBC. We can't stop that. It's part of the agreement that assisted the public service not to be in the five system. We know we are relaxing. We are not afraid of anything. And it shows that there was also a commitment from the trade union at their level to say if they are not going to do anything, they are not going to do anything. They know agreements that are binding. And I hope also that they know that this is binding to them, the service tax. When you come in as an employee in the public service, you don't just come in and sign only for the sake of business, but you make a commitment that I'll carry out my duties and do whatever is wanted out of me from the public service. My question, Honorable Chair, is I didn't hear the minister or the presenter telling us anything about the role of the school of government, because people need to be trained. You know, how do we change the mindset of the public servant? People have been waiting in the public service for so long, and they'll tell, we've seen back to pay, we've seen this and this standard. What difference is this bringing in? I think maybe the school of government might have a role there, if there's any role to play. Maybe if we could get an explanation on that. My other question is on the Batubele call center. Do we have enough human resource capacity to follow up on cases? Do we have enough human resource capacity to follow on these cases? And also, if we could also think about the turnaround time of dealing with the queries that will be coming in, the complaints, say the turnaround time of us, because it can't take the whole year for someone's queue to be addressed. And the other thing as an input, maybe if we could also think, in order to popularize the charter, rope in the community development workers. Because they work daily in different wards. They are ward-based. They are the link between the people and the department. They go to departments. Sometimes they also see how our people are treated at a different level scale of government. They know about them. And also, because we are having, we have heard about the roadmap of the department, what they are going to do, and so on. I don't know if there's anything that the trade unions on themselves have planned to do with regards to the service charter on their own, to talk to their members, to inform their members about this, whether they have, if maybe there's people from the PSCBC, to say that they've shown us, the Labour members, they've got their own roadmap, to say we'll do roadshows, we'll do this, we'll talk to our members in this way. Because what I'd like to see is, I'd like to, when I go to a hospital or a clinic, to find the cleaner even knowing about the situation. These people believe in their trade unions. What are they really doing? Not only to see the government popularizing, but also from the side of the trade unions. And thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and also express the word of appreciation. I think the service charter, an important document or tool to make sure that the public service do what they have to do. I think that we need to say to the minister, well done, but the challenge is going to be drilling that into the implementation of it. So and I want to just start with the question that the honourable member ended with, the trade union question. I guess the most important task is going to be the education part of the public service themselves in doing what they have committed, or the leaders have committed to the service charter, that I shall do this with the CPR. So therefore, the 1.3 million public service, the education part of it. I just want to hear a little bit about that. What is it that both parties have committed to doing? I know that there is a presentation that the senior pre-marches between now and March. But that does not give a full total for the actual drilling down into the actual bottom line of public service themselves as individuals perform services. So the question of how we're going to go about educating them, I think that's a question that was raising. What is the responsibility of the trade union themselves with respect to members in terms of education? As well as the, of course, the employer doing certain things, but launch is a launch, but the education drawn down a little bit. The second one associated to that is the societal question. I see the question about individual that we spoke about, the minister speaks about. I think the more education, the more we spend resources on education for public service, the better. If you, in a short to medium term, it will produce more results than the reactive input. So the issue was resources around the education is going to be critical. Now, I know that there was a question about the business card and the cost of it. I just want to ask Minister, I guess most of the publishers, all of them, they do have a kind of a card that is used to actual reading. And there is a space at the back of the card that could also be utilized, or the real card. If you authorize the commitment of each one of those public services and find it for the name of the back of the head, so there is nothing on. And it is utilized as a commitment that educate me as the public service individual in performing my duty, that I committed that I shall perform my function in this particular way. Simply using what you already have as a result of the card, if you have not thought about that in terms of cost saving exercise, because that is already a tool that everybody has. And the one part is the, what are the consequences of the non-adherence to the card? I know that the readers will get the cell phone number to form the, but the issue is there will be a repeat offenses of poor service delivery or individual members not performing to the particular required standard. The core of complaint is at the end a result of what happened, or later in the consequences, or I look at the Deputy Minister that the service charter as a code of conduct will have to utilize interchangeably. Given also we ended up with the service in the code of conduct. I'm asking the question. I mean, if you remember the case of the Home Affair where there was a problem, someone refused to be given the ID and ended up that person killing themselves, and I think the action that the Minister of Home Affairs was that the firing of a public service official on the spot. There was a consequence of failure to perform tasks by and the senior execution authorities were able to say you go on. So I'm asking the question, and I'm giving that example to understand to let's say this point. What are the consequences for failure to perform this function, what is committed in the service charter at the particular point, including the repeat offenses of that? I didn't see it mentioned anywhere in the service charter. That's why I'm asking whether the question that is going to be utilized independently, whether it will then fall into that category. But the person who is complaining about the service does not know what the consequences will be. It will be yesterday by the future situation. What are the consequences? What is the trade union going to do? That's the question I was asking earlier on. To make sure that their members who happen to be the employees understand what they need to do, and therefore they understand the consequences of non-compliance or non-adherence or non-delivery of service in terms of the commitment made. I want to leave it there. The public one, I think the Minister would also do a little bit more. Because the more people understand their rights, the better they will help to accelerate the service that enforce that people are not being in favor. They're there to do any service and they have been tied to that particular service. So the issue about individual and the issue about communication, particularly around in the 11 languages, is going to help for people to understand what they are. So I think I need to comment on the Minister for that. But the details of the implementation is one, and the monitoring of that implementation is going to be key. Surely we can play a role as well as members say, but most of that is going to be at the social contract level that they're going to be able to be able to drill down into that detail. Because if you say the social contract is supposed to be a contract of value that breach, and therefore the breaches of
that each party breaches, we have to have a remedy to resolve it. And that's where, on the service side, I don't see, except the last paragraph that says the dispute will be referred to the party in the country itself. But that does not necessarily come to the dispute. The service level is formal. That I can make a particular position, but as a part of it, it requires consequences for member level of people performing the task. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. So you know, I'm going to start off with a response to Honourable Mohale. Yes, Honourable Mohale, we are constantly improving on what we have. And we started off with Bantu Bibi, we now have a charter, and we're getting better. And we can say with complete conviction that we are better now than we here now than we were in 1994. Today is better than yesterday, and we would like to continuously say that to our people. But we would like to make sure that our people are with us as we say that. We can't be saying that and when they feel, when they have a different feel to it. I also want to appreciate the fact that you have thanked the unions. I must say I was absolutely ecstatic when this was signed, because it was something of a dream that it would happen one day. And it actually would be signed was completely outside my immediate sphere of what was possible. And the unions have proved me wrong. It was possible and it is signed. What made it more historic for me was against the backdrop of such an unstable environment between employer and employee in this country, that these unions would have said, this is what we want to do, this is what we want to commit ourselves, and this is what we commit our members to. I'm ecstatic, so I thank them profusely, and I am really glad that we have the kind of leadership in our unions that when called upon to put our people first, they did think that that was the necessary thing to do. I hope that we will continuously work together and ensure that we are able to deal with our differences, ensuring that at all times we put our people first. We've been through terrible times in our relations with labor, times when in fact our hospitals were unable to work in 2010, times where our children were not able to go to school. And I'm hoping that we can build a different relationship with them. They've showed the necessary courage to take a bold step, and I'm glad that they hear it from the Member of Parliament, the appreciation that we have for this. The School of Government, Honourable Mohale, yes, the School of Government, the reason why we have shifted from Alama to the School of Government is so that we can imbue every public servant with a culture of service to our people. And the culture of service is encapsulated in the charter. So part and parcel of what they would have to learn and understand is what it means to be a public servant, what it means to actually provide professional services to our people. So I am hoping that this will be the education that Honourable Ramathakane talked about. We can't talk about repercussions when we are not invested in educating our people to do things differently. We are going to re-educate all of them to do things differently. They are employed as a service of the state, employed by the people who pay taxes to have their salaries put into their bank accounts on the 15th or 27th of every month, without fail, by CETA. When the member, Honourable Chair, left the room, I thought she had a brainwave, which I was sorry that it didn't work out that way. I thought she had gone out to phone a toll-free number so that she can come back and say, it didn't work. Because it would actually have been good, and I'm glad that we've locked the chief director here. It would actually have been good if somebody had walked out, called the toll center, to see if in fact it does work. He assured me it works. No, please. He assured me it does work, and when it did finally work, I got a very pleasant young lady on the other hand who indicated to me what her job was. She was very well trained. and answer very professionally what the questions that were put to her. But Honourable Mohale, this time we just didn't pick. I should have just given the eye. You might have just done that. I think the idea of roping in the CDWs is a very good idea. Thank you very much for that. We will make sure that, as you know, the Deputy Minister is responsible for CDWs, but they also fall under the DDG for service delivery. We are now making sure that we can solve that problem that has the devil government, service delivery. So we will make sure that the CDWs are part and parcel of this, and the chief, the DDG here will carry that through to the Deputy Minister. Unfortunately, she's not well, and I hope that she will be well enough to attend the next meeting. What are the unions themselves doing about popularizing this? I would allow the unions themselves, the representatives of the bargaining chamber, to indicate, because it's an important question. That's an important question, really. So it's two important questions, both from Honorable Ramatakane and Honorable Mohamed. What are the unions doing to educate their people about this? We are putting them through the school of government. We are making sure that at all times we have the kind of environment where this will be in their face. What are the unions doing about it? Honorable Ramatakane, thank you for your comments and your appreciation. And again, Honorable Ramatakane would like to know what are the unions doing about this matter. Honorable Ramatakane wants to know what are the repercussions for this. What are the consequences? To begin with, we are going to restructure our performance agreements. And every public servant, every employee will sign on this. This is part and parcel of the contract of employment. This is how I am expected to behave, and this is what I commit to do in my work. And I will then head over to the Acting DDG for legal services to say what are the consequences if we should not be adhered to. At the moment, from my perspective, these are standards that we're setting. If they're changed into part of the disciplinary processes, and some of them are changing to offences, then it would be possible for us to take immediate steps. But she will respond to that one in turn. But with your permission, Chairperson, if we could ask representatives of the bargaining chamber what the unions are doing to popularize it, it would help.
Not the social trade unions, because the bargaining council is both trade union and employer. I know that as a department you will be doing your part as a department, but now the bargaining council. So my point is, they must say this is what the trade unions have said they're going to do. But as the bargaining council, which has been facilitating bargaining processes, which resulted to the signing of the services charter.
I was going to say that you put it so well, it could only be somebody who's been from Belly of the Beast.
Thank you, Chair. As a council, from the day of signing the Resolution 1 of 2012, we embarked on a program of workshopping employer and employee rights. That was done. But before I engage on the rest, let me firstly thank members of Portfolio Committee, particularly the Honorable Mohale and others who visited us as council and saw how we could think in our own kitchen, and they were part of the cookout at some stage. Let me come back then to the commitment by the trade unions that on the day of launching
It was amazing. By the way, I have been in this council since 1995. What happened? It has never happened before. That the trade union were members of the delegates who were asking questions directed to the minister, but the union stood up and answered the question. For example, unions were saying, we are not going to defend our own members if they violate the charter. That was a commitment. Another commitment in relation to popularizing the charter, this is what they have said nationally, that each one of them that went through their website and popularize the charter. When you open their website, the charter is there. So the commitment has gone beyond from the side of the trade unions. That when you want to train a trade unionist, you would talk about the beginning. That is training the shop steward. Now, in each shop steward council, the charter presently is on the agenda. So the training process has begun from the level of short-term councils. Thank you.
A matter of the what do we do and the consequences, both the DG, labor and DDG Labour and Acting DG Legal Services might respond to that.
I'll leave it to Advocate Chicken.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, the issue of putting it into the performance agreement is that the employees effectively commit themselves and they then need to be assessed based on the commitments that they themselves have made to how they will deliver those services. It requires, therefore, that managers actually monitor the performance of the individuals concerned, and where there are mistakes that are picked up or a lack of capacity identified, that those employees then need to be educated or re-educated about the mistakes that they are making as the first step. However, if it is picked up that this is in fact willful wrongdoing on the part of the employee, one would then have to move further and not then just look at the corrective measures, but actually take disciplinary action against the individual. So the disciplinary code will come in, but as a first measure it is to correct the behavior. If the behavior, however, continues, it will become more punitive as the process unfolds. And individuals effectively will not be able to hide behind a lack of resources, a lack of monitoring and evaluation on the part of the employer. Everybody in this process will be required to do things differently and be able to indicate what it is that they have put in place to correct the behavior of the individual. And at the end of the day, if public servants do not want to serve the public, they will find themselves out of the public service. We are very, very stern that we cannot continue to allow public servants to behave as though they are doing the citizens a favor by performing those functions.
Thank you very much. I think we have to move to the next item. But I think I must say, Minister, about your challenge in your presentation, your technical presentation, as to what will be the contribution of Parliament in making sure that the public services charter is realized. Why should between law parties
departments at the Bargaining Council, but also at the centre, be invited, that we have to make sure that this public services standard that does not lead to pain, but it leads to the services being delivered at the right time on the time. And then I think the contributions and questions that were raised by members in constituencies, if and a member's constituency wants to make sure that the public who are not necessarily the public service, the people who are supposed to get that service, which has to be delivered by the public service. So I think your department will be available in an event where a member of parliament calls a meeting in his own constituency and to be assisted in terms of making sure that the public there are these tools that you can use if then you don't get a service and so on. So I think that was secondly, I think the what could be a tool by members of parliament, even in making statements and asking questions to you, I think it must be statements that talk to what is it that is good as a result of the services charter being agreed to. How do we assist with this department? How do we assist government in making sure that the service does improve? I think that's another role that we need to play as members of parliament. Not only for us to criticize and look at wrong things, but at the same time, to make sure that we popularize everything that is good that we see. And this is the last point from me that I want to comment on, Minister, is that why the PEM bill is still in the process, but that doesn't stop local government to be part, because local government is another sphere of government which does deliver. So now we can then say no, let the local government not to be part now unless the amendment on the public service sector it does improve. I think it's about service delivery in the main. We know that there's local government, there are legislations of local government. But for those complaints to arise at you, you will know your colleague with the minister in local government, there are these issues that were raised, then can you deal with this, and then you'll make a follow up decision. So I wanted us to take it in that way. And obviously, once we finalize the bill that still coming to us, at least we have done something, because the issue here is about service delivery in the main. I just wanted to raise those three points. And then, I'm not used to the chairperson. Now, Zola is doing what she used to do. To the chairperson, saying, "10 minutes break." Can you take 10 minutes break?
I wanted to thank you on behalf of the bargaining council, because they will be leaving. The next matter is not within their company, and I will be requesting to accompany them out while we take break. And therefore, to thank you very much for this opportunity. Thank you very much for the encouraging words, and thank you for the comments that we received. And we will certainly improve on what we have, because the comments can only enhance what we put together. I wanted to say as a parting shot that one of the first political parties that called my office wanting a copy of the charter is the IFP. And I had hoped it would be the
Democratic Alliance, because they are the biggest opposition party. I almost said biggest something, but they are the biggest. And the next biggest is COPE, but we have heard from them. We would like them to outdo the IFP. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
As Minister, I also see a note here that you might be living, it's fine. And I must say thank you very much because you are consistent in attending this meeting. If it is the Portugal meeting since on Wednesdays, twice that happened at the same time. But when you find space, you do attend. And I think we must appreciate that.
Anyone who has a gap of tea or coffee, what is one of the men for that?
The second and the last item is written by the Department of Public Service Administration on the African services. So today's meeting is about charter. Charter is nothing else. And I think it's because South Africa is not an island that exists within the continent. That's why the African Service Charter. And I'm confident that it's not a long presentation like the previous one. You can hear the continent bigger than South Africa. But the presentation won't be like, won't be equal to the continent.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning to the members. We are going to address the committee on the African Charter. The Charter has already been signed by some members to the AG. It is a charter that is driven by the CAMS, which is the Minister of Public Service Administration in the continent. South Africa plays a key role in the development of the charter, and there is a concept that although we play a key role, but we are not privy to it. So it's important that we actually take the process forward. So this is the process that I'm going to ensure that the charter is ratified by Parliament so that we can actually affect and implement as a country among those countries. I'm going to ask Mr. Mahamba to take us through the charter. Over to you.
Thank you. Chairperson, the acting DG, members of the portfolio committee. We are going to present what we call the African Charter. But we will start, as the chair indicated, that it's not going to be a long presentation. I think what will be a little bit long, it will just be a background so that the members of the portfolio committee can understand where we are with regard to the charter. So there is a presentation outline, but outside that presentation outline, there's a little bit of a background that I'll give for a few minutes, and then we'll just focus on the presentation. So
I just want to talk about the overview of the charter. This charter was ratified in 2011 in an ordinance summit which was held in Addis Ababa, where most of the African countries which are part of the AU or part of the what you call the camp ratified this charter as an instrument that can be used in case of making sure there are values in making sure that the continent is run smoothly. So the AU summit during that time emphasized the importance of the charter in an ongoing collective effort by the member states to improve public service delivery in order to combat corruption, protect the rights of citizens and users of public service, as well as promote a good governance and sustainable development on the continent. Then the summit then called all member states to take the necessary measures as soon as possible to sign and ratify the charter. The AU Head of State and Government Summit, which was held in Kampala in Uganda, declared this period of the decade of shared value among African countries central to the theme of shared value in the quest of framework to guide the transformation of African public service for efficient and also effective service delivery to the populations within the continent. This is where the African Charter on Values and the principle of public service comes into a hand. So currently, in case of the Charter, 30 member countries have already signed the charter, but they have not yet ratified it, because there's a process that we are here to make sure that if the charter, the portfolio committee give us a go ahead, we are able to sign it and also ratify it, and then we become one of the leading countries within the continent to have acceded to the charter. So far we are saying only 3 member states countries have already acceded to the charter, which is Kenya, Namibia, and also Mauritius. But as it stands, for the charter to qualify to be implemented or to be adopted or to be taken as an instrument that can be utilized, it needs 15 member countries to ratify the type of the charter so that it can be implemented. But presently, we are still trying to make sure that all countries are signing this charter so that it can be implemented. We also want to indicate that the charter was championed by the South Africa. South Africa was the chair for this charter for I think it was for 4 years while they were championing this charter. Then Kenya took over, and then presently in the last conference of African public service ministers is where now Congo Brazzaville was elected as the chair to make sure that they can be on the charter. That's a little bit background in case of the historical background when coming to the issue of the charter. But coming to the presentation outline, as we said, we are going to talk about continental governance and public administration as part of the program. What are the objectives of the charter and also processes to adopt the charter, consultation process on the charter, and the charter articles and provisions and the recommendations that we require from the portfolio committee or what we call the parliament. We are saying from the presentation that the Continental Governance and Public Administration Program is driven by the Conference of African Ministers of Public Service. Ministers of Public Service around the continent realize that they need to have shared values, shared principles. So they came together and established this, what we call a forum, which is called the Conference of African Ministers of Public Service, which is called CAMP within the continent. As we indicated in the background, we said South Africa chaired this conference for the 2 conservative terms during the 4th and the 5th conference, running from 2003 until 2008. And then after that, Kenya took over to chair, and then presently, as we said, in the last camp conference, it was Congo Brazzaville objective of the charter is to ensure quality and innovative service delivery. That means the requirement of all users within the continent. Encourage citizens and users of public service to ethically and effectively participate in public administration processes. Promote the moral values inherent in activities of the public service agent with a view of ensuring transparent service delivery. Promote equality between men and women as well as equality within the public service and administration structure. Strengthen cooperation and among the member states, regional economic communities and international communities for improvement of public service and administration. And it also encourages the exchange of experience, best practices in order to create a database of information within the member states. So it was created for the sake of sharing best practices. If for Kenya, in case of the e-learning, e-government, has got a prominent role that they are playing as a country, we can be able to share how they did it right so that we can be able to implement it right in our country. In case of the processes for the adoption of the charter, we are saying the origin of the charter was a trade at Rabat declaration in Morocco 1998, which was focusing on the public management ethics in the African public service. The draft charter was formally adopted at the 6th and African Conference of the Ministers of Public Service on the 5th and the 6th of February in 2001 in Namibia. Following the discussion on the draft charter at the 6th Conference of Ministers of Public Service, the Executive Council of the EU asked member states to update the charter by going deeper and enriching the review process by sharing national perspective on the reform process. The draft charter was by the 6th African Ministers Conference convened in South Africa in 2008, subjected to further review by member states and legal experts. Continue with the consultation process on the charter. The first consultative forum on the draft charter was convened by Namibia in September 2005. The draft charter was further discussed at the regional forum on reinventing government in Africa, Asian Charter convened by UNDESA and also in Addis Ababa on the 11th. Of 2006. As mandated by the 6th Conference, Mozambique convened an AU member state, senior official experts. We were part of that meeting to look at the charter in case of making sure that all, in case of the principles or values, are covered by the continent. Post-ratification, a regional consultation on charter was convened by Congo Brazzaville in December 2011. As part of the consultation process, the charter has been reviewed by both the Department of Justice, Political Development, and Department of International Relations and Cooperation. In South Africa, we've got a process before we can accede to the charter. Immediately when a document or is developed, or a charter is developed, it needs to go to the Department of Justice, where they will be able to assess as to whether it does not violate any laws of this country. So it was taken through that process, and then ultimately it was approved by the state law advisor, and then lastly it went to DECO, where in case of the DECO it was agreed, and then also it was presented to the cabinet. It was presented to the cabinet committee and followed up to the cabinet. And then ultimately, it was sent to the parliament, where the Speaker of the Parliament said it must be sent to the Portfolio Committee so that they can deal with the issue of the ratification of the charter. We've got actors that we are not going to talk about, where we've got definitions, that is how the charter composed of. Talk about respect for human rights and legality, access to public service, access to information, efficient and quality service, modernization of the public service, and all those things. If you can look at that, you will realize that it might be a complicated of budgetary principles within South Africa. So that is the South Africa on the driving point in case of making sure that this charter realizes the goals in the case of making sure that the continent is driven accordingly in line with our shared values and the principles. As the chair indicated, that we should be shorter. This is the recommendations or what we request now the portfolio committee to do. We are saying in line with the cabinet approval, it is recommended that Parliament grant the final approval for South Africa to accede to the African Charter on Basis and Principles of Public Service and Administration. Immediately when the approval is granted, it means the charter will be signed, and then in the next Sunday is then that we can be able to ratify the charter and accede to the charter and become a member of the African Union who have acceded to the charter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I anticipate that the position will not be long. You have done exactly that. There's only one recommendation, but that doesn't not a way of denying members that one to anything, but at the same time, it's a cogent issue. I think the presentation is speaking of the fact that South Africa, as a member state, was in the driving force of the establishment of the African Service Charter. Now, the only thing that has not been done, like it is done to any international law, then Parliament has to endorse that. I thought that there been that raised, but because what it means, while it is a briefing by the department, but it needs now the endorsement by the portfolio committee in order that it can be processed to the National Assembly, that it happens with any international law, in order for Parliament now to take a step in relation to that.
No, thank you, Honorable Acting Chair, and Dr. Arnold for the presentation. Thank you as well. I think that the recommendation is straightforward. I just want to say that South Africa has been in a driving seat, but in terms of the sun, it's been overtaken by other countries, including Mauritius. Quite a stretch. But it's not late to the plan that to accept the recommendation that I think that South Africa is a country that is initiated in terms of the process. We should accede to the country planning, and therefore I think those four recommendations would be appropriate if we made as part of the committee report for us. want to shortcut that this is a long debate to say that we should have signed the long ago. But there is agreement that the plan should happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, any other hand?
Can I just say, Chairperson, I mean, in terms of what we have heard, we cannot foresee any problems, but however, I think we must have the opportunity to go through the charter ourselves. I think it is just to say, yeah, based on what we've said, it's probably irresponsible. As I said, I mean, in terms of what we've heard, we cannot see any problem, but we would love the opportunity to go through the synopsis just ourselves to make sure that we are confident with all that we're recommending there. Thank you.
Yes, should we have to report back to our caucus if we recommend something? We cannot do that unless we have the discussion and read through it properly or go through it properly. That's basically it. We just need some more time to endorse it on us.
When I was looking for another hand, I was looking for a hand that would support what other people like another hand initially proposed. But no, it's fine. If that did happen, I was going to check as to whether there is a different view, but the different view is qualified by the fact that the two members, they don't have a problem with what is in the document, but now they want now to take it to their caucus to say this is what has been raised in the control committee and it needs this. We didn't want us to do that without mandate of the caucus. But it's important for that motion that was made earlier to be seconded. To check whether it is so. Honorable President.
Thank you, Chair. Really, I thought that really it's also to second what Chair, Honorable Lamachak and I think, Chair, really this one, yes, of course, if we said that this thing is going to be for to Parliament, then therefore I think they are right to go back to their party, but we need in Parliament, in the meantime, as a committee, we need to endorse and support this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honourable Mohan.
The last thing, but I just wanted to check with the presenter what is the next AU meeting where you're supposed to attend and maybe sign the charter, so that because in Parliament is confirming and so on. We'll see how to deal with the understanding that the DA is still going to consult with their caucus. But we are actually.
The next summit will be in January. But what might happen is that the conference of African ministers can be called at any time, where it's just a signing, because the signing is that the country intends to ratify. It's not that you have ratified. You're signed as a member country. We are concurring with the charter, but we are still following the internal processes within the country to make sure that it's ratified. But in case of ratification, it will be during the AU summit in January, which the head of state and government will be sitting by that time. So if the recommendations from the parliament can be before that day, it will, before January, it will assist us so that our president can be able to assist to that, because it's only the president that signed and the ratification in case of the African charter. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I think there's no harm on everything that has been said. think the important aspect of what has been said is the programming and also not knowing where you come with the cost, which is something that has to take place even before the summit itself in China. And I think the point that Honorable Makakala Ramas
Toki spelled R-A-M-A-T-M-A-K-A-N-E pronounced Ramakakane. Just the correct, to give the correct pronunciation and spelling.
No, the difference is that I'm a member of the ANC, and I used to have meetings with the members of the ANC, not once a week, almost every day a week. So it happens that there's a member of the ANC whose surname is similar to yours, not necessarily how yours is spelled and pronounced. No, I think the point that you raised earlier, Honorable, is very much important, that because if you get from the background, South Africa was big. But the only thing that South Africa has not done is to bring this to Parliament through the Popular Committee, of course, in order for it to be endorsed, in order then now to be ratified in the AU summit. So it's something, your point was, how can we lead something that we have not even endorsed as Parliament? At a labor stage, that's exactly the point. And the reality of the situation is that that AU summit, AU itself, it was led by South Africa. In fact, almost all the forums, I must not say all, but I think the majority of the forums that exist in the continent, South Africa has been leading. And I think that's the issue. But it doesn't take away the fact that any member in the Popular Committee can take the document to your constituency or wherever that you have to take it. But for the processes that are required by CAMP, by the AU Summit, everything else, I think we need to do that correctly. We mustn't miss, because it won't be good. There has just been a public service charter, I mean, agreed at the bargaining council, as something that was negotiated between two parties, that in nature they are not the same, but this one is governed, which are the same. So I think the there's nothing wrong for other Mbale and other Deutsch to take it to your caucus. But however, as the committee, in order for other processes, programming and everything else, if it might happen that in the document there are things that you disagree with, during the time it will be presented to Parliament, I think you have an opportunity, whether by declaration or anything, to do that. But just for administration and procedure, I think for me, I'm persuading you that let the committee adopt it. But that doesn't stop you to take it to your budget.
Chairperson, I think with the qualification that you have given, we have no problem in supporting you in principle.
Thank you very much. Obviously, the Secretary will know what to do, which office to deal with in order for it to the process, in order to be in the order paper.
Can I just request that we just be informed when that will be happen, so that we will have, so that we know that, you know, which caucus meeting we must play with in our caucus. You know, so if it's in a month's time, we can do that, because we know that we have enough time.
time for me to say thank you very much. God.